Welcome to the D Word Podcast, where we talk dementia. Glad to have you on board for another podcast. It's always good to welcome previous guests back to the show, and in Gavin Quaid's case, having been one of my first guests some 6 years ago, he's part of the D-Word family. When we first met, he'd just written his first book after being diagnosed with Lewy body dementia. Since then, he's become Dr. Gavin Quaid and is currently chair of the European Working Group for People Living with Dementia. Well, it's always good to welcome an old friend back onto the show, and particularly one that's been there since the very beginning. I first talked to Gavin in July 2019. Seems such a long time ago. We wondered how far the show would go. That was in D-Word number 8. We have now got over 300. And things have really moved on for you as well, Gavin. But first of all, welcome back to the D-Word. Great to see you.
It's absolutely fabulous to be here. And it really is hard to believe that it's going on 7 years since I first appeared on the show. I mean, it just shows with using your voice and the power of your voice and putting your story out there, the benefits a person like me can get from it. You know, I have a lot of ailments, and I've gathered a few more. I kind of gather once a year, or one a year. I've since got diabetes. But frame of mind-wise, and, you know, mentally, I'm in a great place. And if 7 years ago I didn't think I'd be here, so we're on a winner. We're on a winner straight away in that one. You know, it's wonderful for me.
Yeah, and it's great to be able to talk to you. And so much has happened in that time. You've had the two books, of course, that have both been out and very successful. And, you know, I understand that might just be number 3 on the way.
Number 3 is on the way, and I've had to push back on a few dates that I thought the book would be ready, but it definitely will be out this year. And, you know, for people that are writing, you know, something I found, I got to a stage in the book where I quite a lot written. And I, as you know, I had no formal training as a writer. I discovered the love of writing after being diagnosed. And I couldn't figure out what's gone wrong. Why can I not write anymore? And do you know what was missing? And it struck me one day, because the way my life has changed since I got my hearing aids and hidden hearing is night and day. I can tell you a bit more about that in a minute. But I was sitting in a little office I have made for myself one day, and I thought of the name of the book. Can you hear me, Lewy? So you have Lewy Body Dementia Survival in Me, which was my first one. My second one was I Am Kevin, Not Lewy. And people thought that was, you know, there was a nice catchy ring to it. So the third one is Can You Hear Me, Lewy? And the reason being is it will be on the difference that getting my hearing checked and repaired has made to my life, and thousands more since. I work with the company Hidden Hearing there in England as well. Is incredible. But what I wanted to do with this book was, it's a kind of in two halves. The second half of the book will be a continuation on of what I have done in speeches I have given since my last book. But the first book is stuff that will go hand in hand with medication, and maybe even be able to reduce medication. I like get your hearing done, get your eyes checked, music therapy, animal therapy, talking about social isolation and how to get over the hump of that and get away from that, and how to break free from. You go into a doctor's office at 11 o'clock. You come out with a diagnosis. And for so many people, it's like they're after attaching a ball and chain. That you're stuck in that position, that you can't move, that you can't go. It's to get that ball and chain off from around your neck and get back out and live your life. Like there's two ways you can look at everything. Take a pot of boiling water. What's one of the most delicate things in the world you can put into a pot of boiling water? Is an egg. The pot of boiling water will harden the egg. But if you take a vegetable, like a potato, and you put that into the same pot of boiling water, what's it going to do? It's going to soften it. So if you applied that kind of thinking to when you're diagnosed, do I want to come out the hard-boiled egg, or do I want to come out the soft-boiled potato? In other words, am I going to go down the hard road, or am I going to go down the soft road? The hard road, there is no instructions for. You make them yourself. But the soft road, or the easier of the two roads, that's when the help comes in. That's when other people comes in. That's when the power of the lived experience that comes in. And that's when the power of your own voice, that's where that comes into play. And I'm 7 years later, I'm living proof of that, sitting here with you today.
Yeah, you certainly are. There's no doubt about that. And, you know, the whole communication, the whole social thing, I think what's developed in the 7 years since we spoke is that the impact of social things, you mentioned music therapy and all these kind of things that, you know, probably 7 years ago when we first spoke, people were thinking dementia and then reaching for a whole box of pills. Whereas now there are so many social interventions and real importance of those social interventions as well.
And the funny thing about it is the part that the community will play in maintaining your freedom, your sense of purpose in life, is unbelievable. But my community are no good to me unless I do my part. And I suppose the place I'm living in now, Kentucky, North Cork, I was a complete stranger here. No one knew me. And for the first 2 years, I didn't have the label of Kevin Quaid, who had Lewy body dementia. And I seemed perfectly normal to everyone. But next thing was creeping out that I had Lewy body dementia. Next thing, I wrote a book and people are thinking, what's he at? And you'd meet people in the street, are you the fellow with the dementia? But roll on, even the 7 years, it has come full circle. I'm now Kevin Quaid. And when I say music therapy, I remember I used to be a DJ in my past life. And when I joined the Alzheimer's Society, and there's one very good one in Cork, and they said, oh, you're a DJ. You'd absolutely love what we do on a Wednesday, singing for the brain. And I said, I could not think of anything worse than singing for the brain or singing for anything. But they said, you were a DJ. I said, yes. And can you sing? And I said, well, I'm told I can. Well, why don't you sing? I said, I do, but I need to have a few pints in me. And it needs to be in the pub. And it needs to be with either family or friends. And the fun is going out. And when you go in the door and when you're sitting down and you're having a few drinks and the sing-song has stopped, then you're after forgetting to bring the dementia in with you. And it's a wonderful place to be, and it's a wonderful feeling. So I have come full circle in my community. And not every day is a good day. Like I've been telling you, at the moment, I have a bowel infection. Infections are part of Lewy body dementia. And you've got to roll with the punches sometimes. Not every day is a good day, but my nights, I'm not sure whether I spoke about my hearing or not on the last show, but for your new listeners, people, especially with Lewy body dementia, one of the massive problems are nightmares. And I have REM sleep behavior disorder as well, and I have sleep apnea. I would wake at night crying inside in bed, balled up, wanting to go to the bathroom, which is like 3 paces away, terrified to get out of the bed because I did not know who I was. I did not know who was lying next to me. And it would take so long. I would almost wet the bed. I got my hearing aids from Hidden Hearing. And within 6 weeks, the nightmare started to ease. I think I've had one bad nightmare. No, I'm wrong. I've had no nightmare in 2 years. I've had nights where I've had unpleasant dreams. But the second I wake, I know where I am, I know who I am. I might be upset by the dream, but that horrific part of my life is over, and it's down to hearing aids. So I think one of the, a couple of points. If a person thinks they may have dementia or a loved one has dementia, don't be afraid to get a diagnosis. Go for it. Because if you have the diagnosis and you get it in time, then there's a lot you can do about it. Sit with it, take your time, but then get your hearing checked, get your eyesight checked, go to the doctor and get your bloods done. Have a look at the complete package and say, right, this is where we need to go from here. Then you listen to programs like yours. You look up people and get involved, and get involved in your community and see is there someone in community? Is your community dementia inclusive? Is it dementia friendly? And all that makes your life so much easier. And it takes away the stigma from yourself. And I know for me that probably the people that I suppose trying to convince, yeah, trying to convince was the right one. The people I found the hardest to convince were family and friends. And it was only last year I realized that for 6 years I carried around a letter in my pocket from my neurologist in case people wouldn't believe me that I had Lewy body dementia. And one day I don't know what I was at, but I just put my hand in my pocket, I took out the letter and I read it and I said, why are you doing this? Why do you have to prove to people? You're out trying to prove that you're okay. You're out trying to prove that you're normal, that you can live a normal life. But yet, if someone doubts and questions you, you need to show them a professional's letter. And I said, don't do that to yourself anymore. You're better than that. You owe yourself that much. I don't want this. I didn't cause it. It's not my fault. And the day I put the letter back into the folder was a paradigm shift in my life as well.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
On a previous podcast, I mentioned Safe and Found Online, which is a new service set up with police forces throughout the UK in line with the Herbert Protocol on people missing who are living with dementia. And I've now been in touch with one of the founders of the scheme, Chris Cheshire, and he'll be coming on the podcast in a couple of months. This week, though, I'm chatting to Dr. Kevin Guaid. I think that is so interesting in terms of dementia, unlike any other form of ailment. Because, you know, as you know, I had a cancer diagnosis 3 years ago or whatever. I didn't have to, you know, I didn't even think about carrying a letter around to prove to people or whatever. But it's just really, yeah, it's just so strange that in terms of the stigma that comes with dementia, you know, you might even have felt at one time you had to do that.
Yeah, you see, and I think that's a major problem for people that may be living on their own or living in rural Ireland. And like so many people here, especially people 60 plus with a farmed habits, they would say, who take farmers that will go out to the pub 5 nights a week for 2 drinks, 3 drinks, and they will go at 10:30 until 11:30, whatever it is, to meet their friends. They are so afraid to tell people what is wrong with them. And it's sad because the genuine people stay with you. It's like the amount of friends and family that changed from me. Family that I thought were very close ran. Friends ran, couldn't run far enough or fast enough. And then there was family members that came to me. And later family members that came to me for advice. And new friends came and complimented me. And if people, when I'm out, like when I go to the pub or whenever we're out, someone will say, how are you doing? I say, there's a pint in front of me and there's another one coming, so we're not doing too bad. And if someone wants to go deeper, were you away? Yeah, I was. I was at the European Parliament or wherever I was. And if they want to find out more about it, then I tell them. But if they don't ask any more questions, I won't give them, you know. It's not that I don't want to, but I don't want to make my life and every conversation that I have about dementia. I want to hear about their interests, and they want to hear about my interests. And like, I have got into the area of motivational speaking as well, which I absolutely love. I really love it. And I have gone into work with Vision Ireland, where I help to give training to the staff of Irish Rail. They're a brilliant, brilliant, brilliant company here. Obviously, they're the only rail company we have in Ireland, and there's 5,000 staff. But I help deliver the training on invisible disabilities with them. And you know, I have always said it, Peter, I've said it for a long, long time. It's the smallest thing that makes the biggest impact. And I have found in every training session that we have done, I probably did 20 of them last year. I'm doing the first one of the year now again next week. The Sunflower Lanyard. The amount of people and companies that do not realize that that's an international symbol for someone who has a disability. And part of the disability training that I do, I have a list of, you know, an awful lot of invisible disabilities. And I was reading it one day, and I was amazed the amount of boxes I ticked off. I was at 12 or 13, all the disabilities I have, including Lewy body dementia. So it's not a person's dementia is not going to come on its own. It's going to bring a whole load of baggage with it. And it's some of that baggage that has caused the day one. And you know, if you think about it, a lot of the disabilities, it could be blood pressure, it could be diverticulitis, it could be sleep apnea, it could be, as I said, hearing, sight, whatever. People are not afraid to talk about that. You could meet someone in a pub and they'd say, they'd have no problem in saying, can you repeat that? I'm half deaf. They have no problem saying that. And they have no problem maybe a month later telling you, oh, I got hearing aids. But they're awful slow to tell you that I was diagnosed with dementia. And it's that cycle that we need to break. And it's the work that people like you are doing with the platform that you have, that we're going to break that cycle. And we are breaking it. And at the Alzheimer's Europe conference in Italy recently, I was absolutely dumbfounded at the amount of children who have dementia in Scotland. I think at that time it was 258. And I was at a European meeting last week where the subject was brought up again, and it's now over 500. That's frightening. So, like, we really need to come out of the fog, and we really need to talk about it, and we need more advocates, we need more voices, we need strong voices, we need people all over the world saying, right, we're not afraid of this anymore. You know, we're standing up for what's right, we're standing up now. This year we asked in Ireland for an Irish Dementia Registry, and they promised us in government in the last budget, and we have our first meeting in 3 weeks' time. So, like, the one thing about us is that when you get a strong voice, people listen to you, and they don't take no for an answer. And I can be the most... my local politician, I think just when he launched my second book, he said, I'm going to give everyone a word of warning here that knows Kevin. If he asks you to do him a favour, you better be sure that you can do it. Because if you don't, he'll break your staff's heart, he'll break your heart until it is done. I said, that's right, Michael, and I will continue to do it that way. So, you know, make sure, never ever give up the fight. It's been the same with, I've been actually 6 years going to the European Day of Persons with Disabilities, and I have been asking for our voice at the table, at the head of the table, as one of the voices, not the only one. And I think that's going to come to fruition next year. But it took 6 years. It took 6 years of asking. But, you know, I suppose it's like in our fight against this disease, not to be afraid of it. I don't ever give up. Never give up the fight.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good. The station that makes you feel good.
All of our shows on UK Health Radio are available for listen again and download from the website at ukhealthradio.com. Back to my guest now, Dr. Kevin Guade. You know, that's strong words and, you know, great motivation. Do you think that in terms of the news, probably over the last 18 months, everybody's looking for a cure? Everybody's headlining, you know, this development and that development. But I've got this kind of feeling that people living with dementia, like yourself, you know, there should be an equal playing field here. We should be looking for a cure. Everybody wants that cure. But also, we should be looking after those people that are currently living with dementia. I do get the feeling sometimes, certainly here in England, those people living with dementia are put second compared to all the headlines that say we are looking for a cure.
I couldn't agree with you more, because I have been at the whole face of this for quite a while, the two new drugs that have been brought out. And it was something I really struggled with because of the side effects, number one, but that side effects in every medication. But I also brought up about there is too much talk about it, because it's not a cure for dementia. Bohr tablets are not a cure for dementia. The criteria number one, the criteria to even get them, is so limited that only very few people will avail of it anyway. We still don't really know the cost of it. On the plus side, at least there is something there. Some of the people that are on the trials are finding great results. My honest opinion, and I know the opinion of a lot of people, including healthcare professionals, are we need to give this another 10 years. That this is the foundation of the house. Nothing has been built on it yet. And I think in 10 years' time, we'll be able to look back on people that have been diagnosed in, we'll be able to look back and see the records for the past 10 years of what have happened. And maybe, just maybe, they will find that it not only works for Alzheimer's and frontotemporal and Lewy body dementia and all the other different types. But at the moment, I don't think the message has been given out clear and loud enough. If you get diagnosed with dementia in the morning, you are definitely not guaranteed to be told, well, you can use one of the drugs, because it's just not right. So, where it's wonderful news that we have a starting line, it's far from the end product. And I think that message needs to be given loud and clear. Is there hope there? Of course there is. It's been 20 years, 22 years since anything was even developed. Now there's two drugs, possibly three, after being developed. And like everything, they need to be improved upon. But, like everything, I suppose, I just have it take it with a word of caution.
Yeah, I do, I couldn't agree with you more. In the fact, it's kind of, we're opening the door, but we got a long, long way to go, and that should only be one part of the jigsaw. All the stuff you've been talking about, hearing loss, sight, music therapy, the whole lot should be in one big jigsaw. But unfortunately, at the moment, I think it's the, that small little element of cure and hope that everybody's clinging on to. But I think, in terms of Lewy body dementia, I in the time that I've been doing this show, it has become more evident to me. Everybody thinks that we have this big thing, don't we? Everybody asks you, what's the difference between Alzheimer's and dementia? And you have to explain dementia is an umbrella term, etc. But Lewy body dementia does seem to have moved forward. Do you agree with that?
For the first 6 years, I thought I was one of two people in Ireland who had it. Whereas there is up to 10,000 people in Ireland who have Lewy body dementia. And they're literally coming out of the woodwork because of the work we're doing. And I remember, I don't know whether you know it or not, but was it the year before last? I was so honored to get an honorary doctorate from two colleges. And I was with a researcher in Trinity College one night, and he said, your name comes up all the time as Kevin Quaid, and why are you not using Dr. Kevin Quaid? And we had a conversation, and do you know what I had? Imposter syndrome. And I said, I look at it two ways. If I go around calling myself Dr. Kevin Quaid, I think people will say, who the hell does he think he is? He's not a doctor. And then the second side of the stool was, or the second leg of the stool was, there was enough people in two colleges that taught enough of me to give me that title. And the researcher said, yeah, he said, but you're missing the third leg of the stool. And I said, what's that? He said, since you became an advocate, and you're an advocate, he said, for going on 8 years, he said, "You have spoken more and you have done more for people with Lewy bodies, and more people are talking about it because of you," he said. "That's a hell of a long apprenticeship, and you need to use the title." Because he said what it does for young researchers, and what it does when I go to a college, say like Trinity College, I'm speaking at University College in Cork to third year students. When they find out, you're introduced as Dr. Kevin Quaid, and when they find out that you got that title after you became an advocate and because of your work, that sends a powerful, powerful message. I went away and I got my card print changed to Dr. Kevin Quaid, and underneath it I put honorary doctorate and motivational speaker. And when people look at it, they look at it a second time and they're impressed, and we can have fun about it and say, not the kind that can write your prescription. I might advise you to go for a pint, but that's it. So look at what, like, in my own life, what I have achieved. I've achieved more since getting diagnosed than I had achieved all my life up to the time I got diagnosed. The people that I have met, the places that I have been. I go back to Australia again in March. I go to Luxembourg the first week of March. I don't even get to come back home. I get to come back to the airport in Dublin overnight, and then I go to Australia. I'll spend a bit of time at the University of Tasmania in Hobart, in the college there. I'm doing work with them. I get back the end of April. I'm at home for a week. Then I'm in Brussels for a week at research and board meetings. And I'm at home 3 weeks, and then I'm out of a research project in Milan, in Italy. So between now and May, I just don't have time to be sick. I have so much going on in my life. The amount of colleges that I work with here in Ireland, I work with University College Galway is the last one I've worked with now, and I'm working on two projects there. One is about social isolation, and the other one is about animal therapy. It's led by a wonderful, wonderful person, Professor Catherine Houghton. And it's just a breath of fresh air to work on projects like that and to see the actual effects that other stuff, other than medicine, other than doctors, can bring. It really is.
Yeah, you know, it's great for us on the show to have followed that story as well, because, you know, I guess when I first spoke to you, you wouldn't have seen any of that on the horizon. And yet it's been absolutely incredible. Sadly, time's bringing us to a close, which means, of course, we'll have to get you back for number six. So we will arrange that one. But Kevin, it's been a great pleasure, as it always is. And thanks to say it to you every time. Keep on doing what you're doing. It's amazing.
It's been such a pleasure. And I have a reason to come back on again, because we'll have to discuss. Can you hear me, Louis?
Absolutely.
And my other two books are still on Amazon and Kindle if people want them.
Yeah, we'll...
Great to meet you, and I really, really, really do appreciate the chance to come on your show and to put my voice out there. It means the world to me.
Thanks, Kevin.
So until next time. That's five pints of Guinness we all want over
yeah,
now.
A virtual Guinness. There we go.
Well, the Alzheimer's Europe conference is in Dublin next October.
Okay.
So all right.
We'll see what we can do. Thanks, Kevin.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks so much to Kevin. It's always great to catch up with him. And I wish him all the best with his new book. And if you want to find out more about the European Working Group, then go to alzheimer-europe.org. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition. Thanks for your company, and I hope you'll join me again soon for some more Dementia Talk right here on the D Word Podcast.